This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Fay. You sound a little bit under the weather.
Well, I'm recovering from a sore throat.
Uh-oh.
So I may sound a little different today.
Well, you still sound fantastic. I'm so sorry you had the sore throat, but boy, I guess you're probably lucky because, you know, this is the time of year the flu goes around, so it could have been much worse than a sore throat.
That's right. It could have been a lot worse.
See? I knew we'd find the bright side in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. There's always a bright side to everything.
Yes. Well, at least, and more good news is this weekend is a little bit warmer, and then next week I think is going to be sunny in the 60s, so that may help you recover a little bit. You know, that ice that we saw last week was not fun for everybody, but there is improvement on the way.
That's right, and we're not even going to think we're in Texas this next week.
I know.
It's going to be so wonderful.
It'll be like being in the Bahamas, but different.
That's right. And if we can make it through a week in the 70s, oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I mean, that's going to be wonderful.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me, too. It's like springtime is here.
That's right. And I've appointments lined up for Monday and Tuesday.
Wonderful. So you're already working into next week.
I'm working into next week.
Goodness
I had
gracious.
To give up on this week. There was some bad weather.
Yeah.
You know.
I think a lot of people gave up on this week. Of course, it was a good thing because, you know, this being the New Year's week that people are still off, you know, a lot of people were off work anyway. Some schools, people were not at school. Offices were closed. Some people were working from home. So volumes of activity were already pretty light. So that's kind of a good thing from this past week, if we can find anything.
There you go. Well, and everybody I talked to took a long vacation.
Good.
I've never seen it in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But everybody took from Christmas Eve till the 2nd.
Yeah, I did notice. It seems like, and maybe it's just the way the holidays fell, you know, with being Christmas Day and New Year's Day both on a Tuesday and then the Eves on the Monday, I guess it probably made it pretty easy to extend weekends. And then by the time you get back to business, well, the week is half over. And so, you know, nobody's doing any business. And so it may have just been the way the holidays fell. But, you know, it's probably a good thing. It seems like a lot of people were on the same type of schedule like that from like Christmas Eve to like the 2nd.
And people spent billions and billions this year on Christmas. It was billions and billions, not millions, billions.
Yeah, it was a lot of spending.
That tells you the economy was moving on.
Yeah, yeah, in a big time happening way. We like to see
that. Oh, yeah. I mean, first time in a couple of years it was that good.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some more good news.
And, of course, the stock market has been rolling.
Oh, yeah.
It's been down. It's been up. It's been everywhere.
It has. It's to the point where you can't just ride a wave because that wave's going to crash. It may come back and then crash again and then it may come back. So it's super unpredictable. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring. Right next to Ivy Cottage.
So with that that stock market, you know, we look at it going up and down and up and down and up and down, and this is a pattern that's been going on for a while now. Is this the new norm, or do you think at some point this may level out?
Well, I don't think it's going to level out for a long time. I think with the China deal, with all the stuff happening in Washington, I know you saw the new recruits in the Democrat Party coming in. I mean, the things they're saying and doing, it shows it's going to be a bad year as far as politics.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it is going to affect our stock market.
Well, you know, and that's kind of, I guess, where people are. You know, they're examining things. They're looking at their portfolio and they're saying, you know, what does this mean for me? I mean, people can see what's going on in Washington, see what's going on, you know, in other parts of the world. But when it comes down to how it affects each individual personally and directly, that's really what people are most concerned about. And I think when it comes down to the actual hardcore base of their concerns, it's what's going to happen to my wealth. You know, we see things like, you know, healthcare possibly changing. We see, you know, taxes changing. We see prices changing. We see, you know, supply and demand affecting things. And we're already getting glimpses of a somewhat of an unstable 2019. And so people want to go ahead and they want to start looking for options where they can still grow their wealth, still do the investing that they know they need to do, but maybe not quite so risky, you know, with things being so volatile. People don't want to have that risk of, you know, literally losing 10, 15, 20 years of investing overnight. And so they're looking for other options.
Well, and I had a lot of calls this last week. People saying, I've already taken the money out of the 401k. I've already got it out of the stock market. Faye, I'd like to come talk to you. I've just put it in the bank for right now.
Okay.
I had a lot of calls about that this week. So I know that people are scared. They just don't want the roller coaster ride. In fact, you know, we've talked about that so much lately, and that's the exact words the gentleman said to me. I'm tired of the roller coaster ride of the stock market.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like it's, you know, because we've stressed this for so long, years, really, about how it's important to make sure that you're growing your wealth, make sure that, you know, you take precautionary measures. So now with any type of investment, there's always risk. But there are certain things that you can do to cut down on those risks. And we talk about, you know, the anxiety that people feel. We talk about people getting up in the middle of the night to see if they still have any money left or if everything's gone. And so really, when we look for that one event that causes people to make a shift, I would say that's probably it. It's that roller coaster. And although it may not be a one-time event, it may be a series of the event. You know, the ups, the downs, the ups, the downs, the uncertainty. That might be the event that we're talking about.
I think so. And it seems like when people finally get enough, they say, you know, my head is not screwed on right. Let's get it straight.
Yeah. And so
that's when they make those changes.
So when people are looking at their wealth and they say, okay, we're into a new year now, you know, it's back to work really for everybody on Monday. And so they're looking at this and they're actually taking hardcore stock in their portfolio. And they're saying, okay, I've got quite a bit in the stock market. I've made some money. I've lost some money, which is pretty normal. So when somebody's looking at that, should they, and I know everybody's situation is different, but would you recommend leaving some in the stock market and maybe going to like a life settlement, or how do you see like percentages?
I think they have to, it's a personal thing. In other words, how much risk can you stand?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to evaluate that and say, okay, if I had to retire tomorrow, where do I want to be? Do I want it all in the stock market if sickness came, if I had to retire, or if the company said we're selling and, you know, you've got to make a decision? So they've got to say, okay, I don't want to take any more risk, or I can stand 50% or 25% risk. If they can't and they're 50 years old or above, they shouldn't leave it in there.
Mm-hmm. Do the ends justify the means anymore, or is the volatility taking a lot of that away? In other words, you know, is it worth riding out at least some of the stock market because of the gains you may receive, or is the risk with the extremes, the extreme up and downs that we're seeing, is that getting to be to that point where you've reached that tipping point? It's just a little bit too much. It's too risky for me.
Well, they have to look back on 2008, and it took them 6 years to get their money back.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're in their 50s or in their 60s, how much risk do they want to take at this age? Do they want to risk it all? Do they want to risk part of it or none?
Yeah.
And so you have to make that decision and say, okay, I lived through 2008. If I'd had to retire during that time, I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
There was no money.
Yeah, people had lost, you know, in some cases, lost everything.
Yeah, and you know, we know a couple of them that had to go back to work.
Yeah.
There was no money.
And that's
and
not
you don't
the way.
Want to do that.
No, no, that's no way to go into retirement. You know, or even if you're not like on the verge, or even if you're not already into retirement, even if you're just, you know, a few years away, that's not something that you want to have. You don't want to wake up one day and find out, hey, my entire portfolio has been wiped out, and so now I have nothing, and so, you know, here I am a year or two away from retirement, and it's just not going to happen. And so now I'm going to stay in the workforce for, you know, another 5, 10, 15 years, and then, you know, people start taking stock of things. How much quality retirement can I really enjoy if I have to stay in the workforce that much longer? And so there are things that people can do. We're not completely at the mercy of the stock market, because we know that anything can affect the stock market, anything overseas, politics, like you were saying earlier, you know, anything that's going on can affect the stock market. And the wonderful thing about this life settlement is where people can invest in a life insurance policy and nothing will affect it.
That is exactly right. And if you've spent all your lifetime, you know, working hard, you expect to be rewarded at the end of that time.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be rewarded if you lose 35-40%.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everybody is on their own. You've got to think about, what can I stand? How much risk? If I lose that much today, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So everybody's got to think about it. But now, the millionaires and jillionaires have been taking billions out of the stock market. Now, they're supposed to be smarter than you and I.
Uh-huh.
And if they're taking millions and millions out, what does that tell you?
It tells me that they're uncertain, and that might cause a little bit more instability in the market.
They are not comfortable, and they're not going to lose their millions and millions at this time. They're saying, we're going to get on the sideline. We're not going to do it.
Yeah. And the thing with Apple earlier this week, you know, the adjustments there. And I forget how many billions they lost. It went down, what, was it 10%?
They lost like 6 to 10 billion.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a ton of money just by downgrading their estimated profits. And so, you know, and I know there's, you know, the different factors, but this kind of goes to what we were talking about earlier, how anything can affect what's in the stock market. And Tim Cook was saying that it has a lot to do with China, some of the tariffs, and then also the fact that China is making a lot of their own mobile devices over there, and they don't need to buy iPhones anymore, which may have been something that's off the radar, because so many people looked at Apple and iPhones as really a staple of the American economy that affects the rest of the world. And it was one of those things that's almost too big to fail. It's like they have a corner on the entire market worldwide. And so people look at this, and now they're looking at that, and they're saying, my gosh, if Apple is feeling some effects, and then, like you were saying, these wealthy stockholders are taking things out, what do you think this means for the rest of it long term? Do you see, because there were rumblings a few months ago about how we could see, you know, another recession, we could see, you know, another I heard some people go crazy and say that we could see another 1929 crash. Where do you think we might be headed this year?
It's just the dadgum uncertain right now. So if you're uncertain, you should take evasive action.
Okay.
That's what I've done. You know, I've always said, take evasive action before it happens.
So we talk about this wonderful thing that there's a great alternative to investing in the stock market. And this is where people can invest in a life insurance policy. And that's really as simple as it is, because and these policies that you have that you offer for people to invest in, they're from people who have been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And so these are very specific policies that you offer investment opportunities in.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we get these policies, we screen them, we look at them, we read everything, and then we make a decision. Can we make money for the client by buying that policy? If we can, we're going to bid on it. If we don't think it's going to work, we're not going to bother with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, this month, you know, we've talked about this in the last 2 weeks, we had $8 million in maturities.
That's a lot.
It is, and that money is hitting their bank accounts now. The Arthur policy and the Brown policy, that money has now hit their bank accounts.
So people are going into the new year with a lot of extra wealth that they didn't have in 2018.
That's right. So they've got new money in their account, in their IRA accounts or their joint account, and they're going to be ready to make more money. But it's a lot of people were in the same different policies. I looked at them, and I was shocked how many people had been in more than one of these policies here at the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, you know, we talked about how 2018 was looking to be at least near record, if not record-breaking year, as far as maturities, as far as, you know, profits. And also one other aspect is policies coming in early. And so the way this works is somebody who is diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, they've got a life insurance policy, and we all know how expensive cancer treatments are. And so when people are often diagnosed, they look for a quick sum of money because they need to go ahead and start treating that cancer. And so usually, not in all cases, but oftentimes, the quickest way to get that lump sum is by selling their life insurance policy. Now, this is very, very different than, you know, the commercials we see on TV where, you know, the retired couple, they're in their RV and the sun is shining and they're, you know, fishing and they're playing in the water and they're visiting grandkids and traveling everywhere. Those are not the policies you're looking for. That's a very different thing. Other people buy those. Other people sell those. We're only dealing with patients who have been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and there's a reason for that.
That's exactly right. We're helping the sick people, not the people that just say, I need to sell my life insurance policy. These people have stage 4 cancer. Their survival rate is not good. We know they're going to pass away. So it helps them. They get a lump sum, and it helps our clients. And they make the difference between what we paid and what the face amount of the policy is.
And I believe, and I hope I'm saying this the right way, but I believe that is where the advantage of this type of investment comes in, because we all know that stage 4 cancer, you know, obviously as human beings, we want, you know, people to survive a diagnosis like that. However, the metrics show that it is fatal. And at that point, once somebody is diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, it's really just a matter of prolonging life as long as possible. The reality is it doesn't usually last that long. We're only looking at, you know, sometimes a few months, sometimes a few years. So it's not like the policy is going to go on infinitely until it matures. And so that's the great part about this type of investment. Like you say, it helps the policyholder. They get the lump sum of money that they need, and they can go on and do their cancer treatments. But as far as an investment opportunity, there is somewhat of an end to the policy. So it really just becomes a matter of invest, set it, and forget it. And you basically just wait for the policy to mature.
Well, and another thing, someone asked me the other day, said, can we go back in the archives and go back to the other shows where they can familiarize themselves, you know, with the product? And I say, yes, you can go back to our archives. You can go back, you know, months or a year even, and study what we tell you. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to our website, and you can go back and look at what people have been making for a long time.
And you have actual earnings posted at AmericanFinancialMidland.com. There's real people there. You just have their last initials, so, you know, there's no personal information being revealed. But you have their name, and you also have their earnings for the year. And these are real numbers. These are not estimated. They're not inflated. These are actual numbers of what people have made.
It comes off their policy. As they mature, we put the numbers up there on that policy. Mm-hmm. So every time it's got, you know, all the policy people, whoever were in it, what they made, when it matured, if it was early, if it was on time, or if it was late.
Now, we talk about these policies having that advantage because we know with stage 4 cancer, there is an end. And in most cases, it is not, you know, that far into the future. And so when you're looking at these, that's the first advantage. The second one, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the second advantage is that once you bid, or once you look at these policies and decide whether or not to bid on, you have information that that is really invaluable, because we talk all the time about how this is such a well-informed investment. And so when you're weighing whether or not you want to bid on these policies, there's certain things that you look for. So what are some of the types of cancers that really spark your interest that you bid on the most?
Well, of course, you know, if it's stomach or pancreatic cancer, you know, we're on it immediately. Breast cancer is another one. It's hard to survive breast cancer when it's stage four. And usually we look to see how long the breast cancer has been going on, if it's a year, or if it's a retreatment. If it's a retreatment, it's they're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. If it's come back in the 2 years later, all the treatment in the world probably is not going to save them.
And so there's certain types of cancer that you look at. But on top of that, you've got what we refer to as page 14 all the time. What exactly is page 14?
It is what gives them all the information about their investment. Tells you who the people are, what life insurance company holds the paper, tells you the rating of the life insurance company, what the face amount of the policy, how much they've invested, what they're going to make, and if it goes over, what it's going to cost them. Mm-hmm. So page 14 is very important. They have to sign off on it.
So the investor knows not only about the policy holder, but they also know that if the policy goes over what they project is the life expectancy of the policy holder, the investor also knows how much they would have to pay, if that were to happen, in premiums.
That's exactly right.
And I don't know, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I cannot think off the top of my head of any other type of investment where you have this much information, which is what makes it such a brilliant thing. And so when you have all this laid out in front of you, there are there have been times where you have not bid on policies, and there's reasons for that as well. It's not like anything that comes over your desk and becomes available. It's not like you just bid willy-nilly. There's times where you have actually bypassed.
Yes, and we keep a record of every policy we turn down. That's another requirement of the government, is if you turn a policy down, you have to keep a record of it. Mm-hmm. You can't just throw it in the trash.
Yeah.
So we know which ones we bid on and accepted, which ones we've passed on, and we keep a record of all that. We also keep a record of which providers are right most of the time. A guy said the other day he didn't think 21st Services was doing a good job, but they are. They weren't a couple of years ago, but they're doing a great job now.
You know, and you touched on this a couple of weeks ago. You mentioned, and I thought this was completely brilliant. You'd said that you have gone back, and you do this regularly. You go back and you look at the data. You analyze the data itself to see if these companies are on track with their life expectancies. You see, is what they told us, did that actually play out? And you have all that information, and you say that the data that you get is still very much on point. It's very, very accurate. And if it wasn't, I guess you would make some kind of changes. But the point is that when you go back, and you don't just take this information blindly, you actually go back and make sure that it is working.
That's right, because of the three, you've got AVS, you've got 21st Services, and then you've got Fasano. Fasano's the best, we know that. And then AVS is good, and 21st Services is good now. A couple of years ago, they were missing the mark, and everybody complained, and they shut down for 30 days and redid their computer models, everything. So now they are very accurate. And then we look to see who's most accurate the most times, because it's all important data.
It is, because, I mean, it's one thing to just say, a couple of years ago, okay, we'll take this data and it'll be great. It's another thing to go back and make sure. It's almost like you're checking yourself, which is important to do because you want to have the most accurate information. You want to make sure that hey, what you're looking at is actually legitimate. It's actually true. It's effective. Our analysis of these life insurance policies, it is working. It is, when we say, when we think it's going to be, this many months, it actually is this many months. So it's close to it. And so that's super duper important. And so when people look at these policies and they decide, okay, yes, I want to go ahead and be a part of it. I want to be in on it. They can rest assured, not only do you know what is working and what's not working, the companies have made their recommendations, but the investors can also look at page 14. They also can look at these policies. They don't have to be doctors to understand these reports, but all this information is right there for them to read themselves. And you go over every little every single line with every person if they want to.
That's right. If they want to, we'll go over it as many times as it takes for them to understand the policy and what's wrong with the people.
Mm-hmm. So when we look at these policies and we talk about life expectancies, where are those numbers determined? Who decides, okay, this person is probably not going to make it 24 months?
Okay. I'm the one that says, even though it says 24, I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I say, even 24 isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll live over that. I looked at a policy this week, and the guy had pancreatic cancer, and usually I jump on him. This one wasn't believable.
Really?
They'd operated on him twice since 14. If he hadn't died since 14, this is 18, this old boy's going to make it.
See, now that's brilliant insight, because I know we talk about how pancreatic cancer is one of the most deadly. Most of the time, not doing this, you know, like you do, to the depth that you do this all the time, from the outside, I would say, wow, pancreatic cancer, yeah, I want in. But you go in, and just because it looks on the surface like it might be a great investment, it may not be. And so you delve deeper. You don't just kind of take the overall blanket analysis as an umbrella type of diagnosis. You actually go in, and that's brilliant. That's insight.
Well, and what I wanted to see on him was it operable? Oh, yeah, it was operable. They've operated on it twice.
Mm.
So if he's lived this long, 4 years, it's not bad.
Wow.
He just barely has it. So it would not be a good policy for us, because we're looking for one that's got 18 months and he's going to die in 9.
Mm-hmm. That's really the ideal ones, because if the policy does come in early, people still get the full amount. In this case, it would be like the 18%, but they get it in 9, which means that they can turn around and reinvest that all the quicker. So these numbers come from these companies that say, okay, we believe, you know, this particular policyholder has this, they've tried this, these are the treatments they've received, these are the treatments they haven't received, here's the status of everything. So the whole picture is there. So they come up with a life expectancy for the policyholder and say, we'll just throw out some random numbers here, say 24 months. So then they send the policy off to you, and then you look at it and you say, okay, yes, this is believable, you know, kind of like the situation you're talking about right here with the pancreatic cancer. You say, yes, this is believable, or no, this is not. We think something is funny. Something is not matching up here. It's a little bit weird. And so once you get the policy, once you say, okay, this is a good one, we're going to offer this, we're going to buy it, you bid on it, it gets awarded to you, that's when it becomes an investment opportunity. And so when we talk about how long the policy goes, that's the number that we're referring to. That's where that comes from, is these companies that look at these, they do the life expectancy. Officially, it's listed in this case 24 months. And so at that point, you go for about 1% per month for the policyholder. That's where the profit comes in.
That's right. We always pay 1% a month. We always have.
And so once that's determined, that's really the basis of, I guess, that becomes ground zero for the entire policy. And so
that's
from
right.
There, if it comes in 18 months, the investor still gets the 24%, but they get it faster. They can turn around, reinvest it faster. And that's how the whole process works. This is not just one of those investments where you do it one time and you're done. This is something that happens over several years. This is part of a process. And this is really how the whole program is designed. It was never meant to be just a one and done type of thing. This is a way for people to grow their wealth over years. And so when people look at these life insurance policies and they say, you know, hey, I'm not sure how this goes. I'm not really sure, you know, if it actually is going to come in 24 months. They can look at the policies, and so that's what makes it such a well-informed investment. And so I think that's really, see, there's so many different layers of information that is available to the policyholder. I don't know that they can get this type of a well-informed investment anywhere else.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity. It works. It pays out. They're going to get their principal. They're going to get their interest. And then the stock market, you don't know if you're going to get it or not.
You know.
You don't even know if you're going to get your principal back, much less the profit.
No.
And so it takes all that worry away.
And as far as cost goes, if the policy does go over, people know ahead of time what the premiums are going to be. And so they know, that, you know, hey, if I have to pay something, this is what it'll be. But just to kind of give people an idea, and I won't go into heavy math here, but just to run some general numbers real quick so people have an idea, they say, well, gosh, I'm going to have to pay premiums. It's going to wipe out my profit. The minimum for this is $100,000. So let's say $100,000, say it's a 24-month policy, and say it goes 29. Say it goes 29 months before the policy expires. We're only looking at a small percentage of that profit because 24%, on $100,000, that profit is $24,000. So on what would an average premium that somebody might have to pay be?
Well, usually, on most policies, it's going to be around $500.
Okay. So you take $500 out of that $24,000 profit, the math makes sense.
Yes. Now, if you've got an old policy, all bets are off. We know that.
Right.
When, if you've got those three or four old policies, we know that it has cost you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got one that we've done since 15, we know you'll be okay.
And when we refer to these old policies, they're elderly people who were not sick. You got some bad information early on in the process, like years and years ago. And so now you're just stuck with these policies, but you don't even bid on those types of things anymore.
We have not been on one like that since 2013.
Yeah, so people don't have to even worry about that. Once those roll off, they're rolled off, and then you're free and clear, and that'll never happen again.
That's right.
So in a few minutes, I want to go over the risks, because there are three risks with this, and you're very transparent about that. We'll do that in here in a few minutes. And we'll also kind of look at what's going on, you know, as we enter into the first quarter of 2019, some of the things that people can expect as far as availability of policies go and things like that. So that's on the way in a few minutes. In the meantime, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and there's always interesting things that you bring to the table. Sometimes we talk about, you know, some kind of history involved with Texas. Sometimes it's someplace to put on your bucket list. Sometimes it's a hero. So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about a nature preserve that almost didn't happen.
Really?
Oh, yes. This is a nice nature preserve everybody should visit. It's got every kind of bird in the world. It's got every kind of hawk. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. But it was started by a man that nobody would have ever believed. This man's name was Elmer Klebe, born in 1907. And in 1913, he was attending the Rose Hill School. But he didn't get along with the other kids, with the other boys. They were bullying him and taunting him. They called him Lumpy.
Oh, no.
So in the sixth grade, he quit school. He started helping his parents on the farm, and he had something wrong with him. It was eventually recognized as a form of autism. And the way it worked was you could tell Elmer to do something, and he would say, okay, what is the reason for it? And if you'd give him the reason, he'd do it. If you didn't, he wasn't going to do it.
Oh, wow.
He just flat wasn't going to do it. So as time went on, he inherited the farm from his parents, and his sister was dead, and there wasn't anyone left to explain to him how to farm, how to take care of it, what to do. So he let it go to heck. His cows were getting in the neighbor's fields.
Oh.
The sheriff came and sold them off. He had no income, had no money. He was penniless.
Oh, wow.
But the farm was worth $750,000.
Oh, wow.
But he didn't understand that. He would get tax bills. He just put them in a drawer. And people would say, you have to pay the taxes on the land. He didn't understand it. So he wouldn't do it. Didn't have any money. Had no job. And the windmill was overtaken by bushes and vines. And it quit working. So he had no water. Had no phone. He would have to go down the road to the store to use the phone even. Because, again, he was penniless. Had no help.
How sad.
Yeah, and his relatives came in and said, look, you need to sell part of your farm to pay your taxes. He said, no, I will never sell it. So he went to called the Audubon Society and told them that he wanted everything to go to the Audubon Society, and they tried to raise some money to pay his taxes.
Oh.
But this was in 1988, and they couldn't do it. So over the years, he was just, you know, getting farther in debt. Well, Harris County Commissioner intervened because they were fixing to sell his property, and they declared him incompetent.
Really?
Oh, yeah, county judge. Oh, he's incompetent. And they were going to sell his property. Well, Steve Raddick, he was Harris County Commissioner, he intervened. He prevented the sale. Then Harris County District Attorney got involved. And he said, we managed to arrange a grant to Harris County. We paid their taxes. And then they figured out a way. They put a trust out for him where he could live the rest of his life on his property. And they were going to establish this wonderful park that he had always wanted.
Oh, how neat.
So the grant was $737,000. They purchased his land in 1991, paid it off, put it in trust for him, and they started immediately transforming, it was called Klieb Woods, into a nature preserve. But around his house, they left it alone, did not touch it.
So he could still live there and everything would be untouched.
That's right. And so they left it untouched till he died in 1991 at the age of 91.
Oh, wow.
Now, the guy that was head of the Texas Parks and Wildlife, he said he had contacted him, and they said, could you go meet with Elmer? And he was president of the Houston chapter of the National Audubon Society. He said, I went out to the property and found him, and with a short time, we struck up an unlikely friendship. And over the years, he would call him at home. He would walk to the nearby store and talk endlessly about wanting to save his property as a preserve.
Wow. How cool is that?
It's really cool. And this guy says, for many years, I kept a photograph of the old gentleman on my wall at the Parks and Wildlife to remind me of his life's work and the privilege of having known him.
Wow.
And playing a small role in helping him accomplish this.
You know, this says a lot about his character, you know, because not a lot of people.
And it's called Klieb Woods Nature Preserve.
Wow.
And it's on Farm to Market 2920. It's open every day, 7 a.m. till dusk. And you can wander around the restored historic farm buildings. It's got these shady trails, towering pines, oak forest, and scattered wetlands. And I've looked at all the pictures. There is the most beautiful hummingbirds, blue jays, red-shouldered hawks. There's bullfrogs. There's every kind of nature there is. And all because of this old gentleman, even though he was poor and didn't have anything, he wanted this to become a nature preserve for the public.
Yeah, and for him to fight that hard to keep it instead of just, you know, give up and sell it to somebody else, you know, to keep it for as long as he did, keep it going, dedicate it over to the Park Service. I mean, that says a lot, and it sounds like it's like super duper peaceful, tranquil. It sounds like one of those beautiful places that you've got to go that's probably going to be moving to, like, your soul.
That's right. And here he was, a recluse. He saved his beloved wilderness from becoming another subdivision. I mean, that's the whole deal right there.
Or a parking garage or God knows what.
That's right. And, you know, he was there close to Houston. It was worth a lot of money, but he had no money. He was penniless.
Wow.
But he loved his land and wanted to go to the Audubon Society.
How great is that? That's definitely going on the bucket list of places to go. Klieb
Woods is what it's called.
Klieb Woods.
And his name was Elmer Klieb. And this old gentleman had a long beard. I mean, can't you just see him on the porch rocking in his chair?
I can. Gazing out over the land and taking in nature for all its glory.
And he would walk all the way to the store just to talk to the Audubon Society to make sure that it would be forever in a trust that nobody could take that land.
Wow.
And he almost lost it. Can you imagine that judge declared him incompetent and was going to take his land?
That would have been such a shame.
Oh, it would have been horrible. I think he would have died immediately.
Oh, yeah, probably. It would have probably destroyed his whole spirit, his whole, you know, reason for living. I mean, it seems like at some point it became a mission of his to share this with other people.
It did, and he wanted to go to the Audubon Society. Of course, they by themselves, when he approached them, they couldn't raise the money. They tried. And then after the judge did this, the county commissioner got involved. He saw what the problem was, and he said, no, you're not going to foreclose on this.
Good. Good for him for stepping
in. And then the district attorney got involved.
Yeah.
And he helped. So a lot of government people changed their ways and came and helped the man.
Yeah. It sounds like people, you know, stepped up. They did the right thing, even though they didn't have to.
That's right. Especially government officials. Usually they're against everybody. I mean, you know, but if they had taken his farm, it would have been the end of Klieb Woods, and it's a beautiful place. Everybody should go there. You have to go there and see it.
Yeah, that's definitely going on the bucket list of places to go. Klieb Woods.
Yes.
All right, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, I promised we would get into the risks of this type of investment into a life settlement. And the reason is because when you weigh the risks of, you know, traditional types of investments, like on Wall Street, people, we all know the risks of stock market. You know, if we don't remember 2008, we should, because it can happen. You know, with all the ups and downs right now, people are losing tons of money. You know, people are nervous. That's what the signs are showing. So we all know the risks of investing in stocks. With a life settlement, the risks are there, but they're a very different set of risks. And it sounds like they're relatively small compared to other investments, but you still like people to know about them.
We do have risk. Nothing is risk-free in this world, by the way.
Yeah.
The first risk is it can go over. And you would have to pay the premiums if it goes over. You have to be prepared for that. And most of our clients are accredited, so it's not going to hurt them. So if it goes over, you pay the premium. You may have to pay the premium for a year. It could go to 2 years. The second one is it is not liquid during that time it's invested. You cannot take the cash out until it matures.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
the third risk,
that kind of goes back to the investors being accredited. Most of the time, they're not in the situation, because if something comes up where they need some extra cash, they've got it in some other account, in some other, you know, whether it's an asset, whether it's actual cash in the bank. There's other resources, and so if you're down to your last, you know, $100,000, then this is probably not the thing. You have to have those other resources, and so people know that going in, and so they're prepared for it.
That's right. We always make sure that all of our people have emergency funds and that they have other assets.
Okay. And so the third risk?
The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. And we've never had one in Texas. Everybody's worth billions. The insurance companies are worth more than the banks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take your average bank, the life insurance companies are worth a lot more.
And if something were to happen, it sounds like there's almost like a plan B and a plan C already in place because people would come in and they'd buy it.
If a company gets bad shape, somebody else will buy it, always.
Mm-hmm. There's just too much money there to ignore.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so the risks are relatively small. They're well informed.
Well, the reward, yes, I think so.
Exactly. The reward far outweighs the risks, and I think it shows that that the risks are small because people are not up all night, you know, wondering if they still have anything left in their portfolio. They're not worried. They basically invest and they wait for the policy to mature. There's no anxiety involved with it. People's nerves are much calmer than they used to be when they invested in Wall Street. You've heard that from a number of people, and so it really is. Not only is it a great opportunity to grow your wealth over time to get ready for retirement, but it's also good for your your body as well. So, you know, there's a number of advantages to this. Now, when we talk about being accredited for the program, what exactly does that mean?
That means you have to make $200,000 a year, or you have to be worth $1 million without your home.
Okay.
That means your holdings like rent houses, ranches, farms, cattle, 401ks, IRAs, all this other.
Everything, except
yes.
Your main residence.
That's exactly right.
Vacation homes.
Yes.
That's also included.
Absolutely.
So when we look at the forecast, I guess, for 2019, normally in the past, around this time of year, we talk about how there's a number of other companies that do something similar that have a large budget to go ahead and bid on similar types of policies. And they'll come in and really not take over, but they'll bid aggressively in the first quarter of each year. How does that look going into this year?
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, we haven't had a long enough time yet, okay?
So a lot of these companies, they'll come in, they'll really bid hard and heavy in the first, you know, few months of the year, and then they'll start to back off. But it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like, from my memory, 2018... for lack of a better term, you held, you know, you gave the other companies a run for their money.
That's right. But we were way behind until the middle of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because they were outbidding us because they're so huge. And that may not happen this year. You know, we've had a couple of mutual fund companies that have approached us and said, what if we gave you $100 million? And I said, well, that'd be a lot of money.
Well, now that is true.
That would be a lot of money, wouldn't it?
That would be a lot of money. So when we say that these companies come in and they bid aggressively and they bid a lot, does it affect their profit margin?
Well, they're not paying their people a lot. The mutual fund company that I'm thinking about, they're paying their people a guarantee of 8%.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter up or down. They're only getting 8%.
So it's worth noting that even though the first quarter, a lot of these companies will come in and they'll bid aggressively before they start to slack off, the profit margins with those other companies are rather small. The amount of money that people make in those types of situations is relatively small. And the reason we mention this is because when you bid on these policies, you're always keeping in mind that profit margin. You're not going to bid on a policy just to get it, you know, if you're going to start sacrificing, you know, investors' profit. Are you just not going to
do
it?
No, we're not going to do that, and we're not going to sacrifice what is wrong with them. You know, it's got to be, 24 to 30 months. It can't be longer than that.
You know, that is a very high standard to hold yourself to make sure that not only are you bidding on quality policies, but you also have that profit margin for your investors in mind when you're bidding on these things. You know, you're running the numbers, you know, you get to that cutoff point and it's like, okay, we're out. If it goes above this number, it's just not as profitable. And to have your clients and your investors be top of mind with every single transaction, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And you know, we're trying every day to make our clients more money, to make it faster, but conservatively, mm-hmm. you know, we have to do it right. So, you know, we're trying every day to get them more policies to make them more money, and that's what we're supposed to do.
And so when people look at these policies and they say, you know, gosh, you know, there's you know, I was expecting like this huge profit on this thing. The point of all this is not to just look at one individual policy. Or investment. The goal is to do this over a number of years. So the point is, you take, and I'm just throwing out random numbers here, you take your 18% profit, you take your $18,000, you take your $25,000, $24,000, $30,000, whatever the profit is on any given policy, you take that profit, you roll it over into another investment. And so people are, there's always things moving. It's always fluid. There's always, you know, there's profits coming in. There's reinvestment going out. And the great thing about this is people can grow their money relatively quickly, I would say. Is that accurate?
Yes. I think, you know, 6 to 7 years is pretty quick.
That is pretty quick. You know?
And we know that you may have some that go over. You may have some that come in on time. And then some are going to be early.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a guy the other day, he said, all of mine have gone over. Yes, it's probably once in a lifetime. These first ones may go over, but the next ones all may be early.
Right.
You never can tell.
It's really the law of averages that you're working here. And that's how these types of things go. The good thing is bottom line, even if it goes over, even if they come early, even if they hit right on time, the bottom line is that we're looking at those long-term averages and the value of each investment never goes down. They still have that profit. They're still going to get what they were told at the beginning of the investment. They're still going to get that minus any, you know, fees if there's a, you know, policy goes over or whatever the case may be. But as we've already established, those fees are relatively small compared to the actual profit margin. And so the great thing is if you were to put this on a graph, you would see that there is, for the most part, over the long term, there is steady growth. And that is the bottom line. There's steady growth. You're not going to find that. Like if people were to graph their Wall Street investments, you're going to see growth. You're going to see losses. You're going to see more growth. You're going to see more losses. With life settlement, you're going to see profits. You're going to see growth.
Yes, and it's not going to go backwards, you know. It's not. They're not going to take away your premium. I mean your profit. They're not going to take away any of your original money. That all comes back to you, regardless of what happens.
So when somebody is looking at this and they're saying, "Well, this is really great," however, I probably waited too long. I probably procrastinated too many years. I didn't get started early enough. There's no way that I can grow my money and have enough to retire comfortably. I've wasted too much time. What do you say to that person?
Well, they need to call me and talk to me about it. Let's see what you've got left, if you've got enough. Remember, the minimum's 100,
mm-hmm.
but you can't retire on 100.
No.
So if you've got 200, 300,000, we need to talk.
What's that magic number where most people need to be at the day they retire?
Well, it would be nice if they're starting out at $1 million to $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes a lot of money to live 20 to 25 years.
And I'm sure as we throw that number out there, people are staring and all of a sudden, oh my goodness, I'm staring, you know, up the entire I'm staring at Mount Everest right in front of me. There's no way. I'm at the foot of the mountain. There's no way I can get up to $1 million or $2 million in the next 10 years. It's possible. You can do it. The point is you've got to get started. And the great thing about this is when you're making profit after profit after profit after profit after profit, and you graph those numbers and you see, you know, you see the trajectory continually going to up, going up. You see those profits are growing. You see, you know, that you know the profits from one investment are going into another, and you're rolling all this money over, and things are happening. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you know much better than I do, but I feel like when people get started after their first investment, maybe two, maybe three, and they really get comfortable with the process and they see how this is going, I feel like at that point they realize, yes, I can do this. I think that's probably happened time and time again.
Yes, it has. And just like the fellow that called me this week, he's procrastinated and procrastinated for years. But when the brokerage company finally lost him enough money, he called me. You know, when he lost enough, he called.
Again.
He had to have some pretty good losses before he called.
Wow. That's one of those trigger events we talk about all the time. You finally lost enough money. That's it. I can't do it anymore. I want to retire. I don't want to go back to work for the rest of my life until I'm like
that's
90.
Right. So, and when I called him, he said, "Hello, Faye." I mean, you know, just like that. So, you know, he'd been listening a long time.
He'd been waiting for you to call him instead of him calling.
Yeah,
you.
Uh-huh. It was pretty funny.
So, for somebody who's not accredited, they don't fall in the guidelines to do a life settlement. What other options do they have?
They could do a safe annuity. It'll pay them the rest of their life, and it would be a good thing for them.
Perfect. All right. So I know you at the top of the show, you mentioned that you have some appointments this coming week. You have availability for other people to call and come in and make an appointment to come see you. One thing we should note is that you are very, very busy, not only seeing clients, but, you know, examining policies, you know, doing all the business that needs to be done. So you highly encourage people not to just pop in and say, "Hey, can I have, you know, 30 minutes or an hour or whatever the case may be." You highly encourage people to go ahead and make an appointment, right?
I do. An appointment is a good thing. It's all your time when you have an appointment.
Okay. So between now and the appointment, what should people be doing? What should they come prepared with?
They should send over a copy of their statements, bring those with them, where we'll know where the money is, how much they've got, and what we can do with it.
Okay. All right, Faye, and one last time, and by the way, thank you so much for being a trooper and powering through your sore throat. I know you've felt terrible, but we do appreciate the information, and thank you so much for doing this today. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to call and make that appointment?
It's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.